My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical... But I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know. And then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today for a very special Hanukkah edition of the Classical Classroom is cantor Benjamin Matus from the Shelter Rock Jewish Center in Roslyn, New York, on Long Island, which I am told exists. Benjamin Matus went to the Peabody Conservatory, and Ben is going to be teaching me, I think, about the music of Hanukkah today. Is that correct, Ben?
That would be correct, yes.
Awesome.
All right, young lady, I expect you to take proper notes.
Will do.
And if you, it will be on the exam.
You know, we actually had a show where I took an exam. I did terribly.
Got like and a, why didn't you? Got like why a, didn't you review?
Todd wouldn't let me.
It was a job. It used to be called, a million years ago when Todd and I first went to school, this was such a thing as drop the needle test because they still had records. So by the time we graduated from college, it was drop the laser beam because, you know, everything, all the records were gone. So they used to, you know, just put it in the CD player and go, you know. So drop the laser beam it is.
Yeah. Yeah, he. Due to his rules, I failed miserably. I blame him.
Yeah.
So first, before we get going, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Hanukkah? Because I know that we all have some preconceived notions of what it is. That there are dreidels, we know. There are some candles. But give us the story of Hanukkah.
You know, I'm very tempted to ask for like the opening credits music from Star Wars now, so I can just give you the... You know, this long narration. So here's the story. After the death of Alexander the Great, you remember him?
You know,
he
sure,
was in a movie a couple of years
ago.
We
go way back.
Yeah, right, with the elephants and everything.
Mm-hmm.
His empire then was divided by his generals. And one of his generals, the followers of this general, were referred to as the Seleucids, and they lived in Syria. Mm-hmm. And they were perpetually fighting for dominance of the region with the Ptolemaean dynasty that was in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And one of these kings of the Seleucids, his name was Antiochus Epiphanes, which is a very schmancy way of saying, Antiochus, I'm the greatest.
Yeah.
And Antiochus Epiphanes conquered Judea. And instead of letting the Jews do what they do, he decided to convert all of them to idolatry, to Greek idolatry specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And so he defiled the holy temple in Jerusalem, and he put idols up, and he had them sacrifice pigs on the altar and all sorts of big Jewish no-nos,
right?
To say the least. So there's one family of called the Hasmoneans, or who take the nickname the Maccabees, which means hammers.
Ah, yes, the Maccabees.
Become,
I know about the Maccabees.
They become the hammers, the Hebrew hammers, and they decide to take on the Greeks, and they win after a very long, very bloody war.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go into the temple finally to celebrate a holiday called Sukkot, which the feast of booths, and.
They discovered that isn't that the one where you there's like a room that you go into that you actually construct? Is that correct?
Yes, it's a little booth you build outside, and it's kind of fun because you have dinner outside with your family, and you have a roof that you can kind of see through. It's cute. It's really fun actually. So they were going to try to celebrate Sukkot, but they came in and the temple was so defiled that they had to clean it completely and rededicate the temple, hence the name of the holiday, which basically means rededication.
Ah, okay.
You know, so Chanukah comes from root chinuch. So it means basically to dedicate, to rededicate. And so they went ahead and they cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and cleaned, and they got ready, and they got rid of all the idols, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which took weeks and weeks and weeks to do. And finally, they realized they only had one purified, sealed container of olive oil left. So this is where the story gets funky. According to the Book of Maccabees, there's no such reference to this oil at all, none. On the other hand, in the Talmud, centuries and centuries later, because the rabbis of the Talmud disliked, for a lot of political reasons, intensely disliked the Hasmonean dynasty, which was established then. I told you, everything with Jews is complicated. It gets very complicated. So they made up this – they came up – they found this story of the one bit of oil that lasts for 8 days.
So hence the 8 candles.
Hence the 8 days, right. Okay, yeah. So you start off with one candle, and then each night gets brighter. So you add another candle each night.
Yeah. How has this sort of evolved into current Hanukkah celebrations? Like, I mean, now I know there are – you know, you get a present every night, and then at the end you get a lot of presents. Is that how it works? I mean, I think of it as the Jewish Christmas. Basically.
Well, that's the problem because it's not.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
I'm
here's
sure.
the thing. Because, you know, Christmas is a major holiday in Christianity, obviously.
Yeah.
Hanukkah in Judaism is a very minor festival at best. It's a very small holiday, but its proximity to Christmas kind of made it into a much bigger deal.
I see. Okay.
And so, you know, it went from in Eastern Europe or other places where you ate something fried and you had some candles, and then maybe you played a few games and you gambled on your on your dreidels.
Right.
Which I'll explain what that was about in a minute. They gamble on their dreidels, blah, 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 blah. And they get, you know, a few coins, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, so my grandfather came to this country, and he years later told me when I was a little boy that, what are you talking? When I was a kid, we did nothing. I looked at him like he had three heads because, you know, I was used to like this orgy of presents that never would arrive on my doorstep, which I miss getting now that I have to give them. And so what can I tell you? So, well, it became a bigger and bigger deal as particularly in the States and in places where Jews had the freedom and the money to sort of turn it into a bigger holiday. Plus, it was fun. You know, it's a fun holiday. There's no serious synagogue time involved.
There's no misery.
There's just eating. There's eating and gambling. I mean, how wrong can you go? And chocolate coins and things like that. So, oh, by the way, the dreidel thing came later. That was also in the Talmudic era. Because students were not allowed to study Torah or learn Hebrew, they would, while studying, they would just play with these tops. So the Roman soldiers would go by and go, oh, look, they're playing with tops. How cute. So that's the story with that. I think it may even gone earlier too, but, you know, that's the best of my knowledge what that's all about. And it's stuck. So it's still fun to play.
Well, I think we – I kind of cut you off before we got to the part where Hanukkah is the festival of lights. The oil – kept burning this small amount of oil for 8 days.
Yes, the small canister of oil that was supposed to last a day that lasted 8 days. So in the ancient temple, they had what was called the menorah, which had 7 branches, one for each day of the week. And that was basically how they kept the calendar.
Okay.
So they, you know, they would know, okay, because on this day you have to do this and on that day you have to do that. And if they didn't have that, then how were they supposed to keep track? So it was a big deal to have this stuff. But if it had been opened and used in idolatrous worship, then you couldn't use it.
Yeah.
It was no longer kosher.
Right. Wow. So yeah. I think we should get to some of the music of Hanukkah, which to
– Yeah, there is the tune for Hanukkah, which is really a hymn text that gets sung a bunch of different ways. But most Americans, Jews, know it only with one melody. And it's called Ma'oz Tzur. And it's I'll read you the translation here. My rock, my strength, my rescuer, it is a delight to praise you. Repair, restore my house of prayer. There I will offer thanksgiving and sacrifice. When punishment overcomes villainous foes, I will chant again that ancient psalm, and dedicate anew your altar. And each of the subsequent verses actually talk about Jewish history, from Egyptian bondage Babylonian exile, Persian exile, and then finally victory over the Greeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is the Syriacy one. But it's a lot of ways to sing it. But these kids from PS22 here in New York City do the best job ever.
Yeah.
They sing it with gusto and very good Hebrew, I may add. There you go.
So,
yes,
I'd love to hear how the music of Hanukkah actually, plays into your holidays, maybe personally or.
It's very common that after you light the Hanukkah lights, that you would sing that song. You'd sing the blessings first, of course, and then afterwards you'd sing Ma'oz Tzor, is a very typical traditional thing to do. Here there's more and more fun choral arrangements of these things, and which is fun to hear. But also the tune itself, for me as a cantor, I will work that tune into the Hanukkah service itself, into the worship service itself. Like, let's say, Sabbath of Hanukkah, I will find a way to put in that tune.
Mm-hmm.
To probably use it to death in the ears of my congregants, but but I'll use it a lot because it's the tune of the day,
right?
Which is very typical to do, which is you sort of recycle whatever the big hit tune is, and you just use it all over the place.
Yeah.
So I brought along two other versions of Ma'oz Tzor, and one is that was an arrangement from 300 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That was taken down in dictation by the Christian composer Benedetto Marcello when he went to visit synagogues in the Venetian ghetto. He went and he heard this tune and he liked it so much that he went actually back and harmonized it. So that Ma'oz Tzor is very nice. And then I brought along another version of a Moroccan rabbi singing it, which is unrecognizable as being Ma'oz Tzor other than the Hebrew. So it's so musically so different.
Yeah, let's hear the first one that you mentioned.
Yes, Benedetto Marcello from Venice.
Okay.
So you get the idea, obviously.
Yeah.
It's very pretty. It's very different than the usual traditional tune.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because Marcello, who was a Christian, decided to go visit synagogues because he was going to write paraphrases of all the Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt that he wanted to do that. He wanted authentic Jewish tunes in them.
Yeah.
So he sat there in the visitor's gallery taking dictation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which is pretty interesting, actually.
I like the harmonies in that.
It's very pretty.
It's interesting.
Because it's such a modal piece, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's hear
Moroccan. Shall we listen to our Moroccan?
Yeah, let's do it.
Ma'oz Tzor Yeshuati Lechana
So So, you know, the thing is with this, if I were to play this for my congregants, mm-hmm. most of whom are nice Eastern European Jewish people like myself, they'd say, you know, what is that Arab doing singing Mao Zedong? And of course, I would say that's as Jewish as anything you sing. And they would say, well, how do you say that? And I said, because he's a Jewish person singing it. Mm-hmm. And he would, if you asked him, he'd say, what are you talking about? This is the way to sing Mao Zedong. You know, it's a very funny thing, you know.
Yeah.
As people, the whole idea of Jewish music is it is what you associate with being Jewish music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. It's almost impossible to really define. So that's one of those things.
Right.
Yeah, what is it? What makes it Jewish? I mean, what, the notes had a bar mitzvah? I mean, it's impossible to make a real definition. I mean, and it provides for some very interesting classes when I've offered classes on what is Jewish music, because, you know, Jewish music is pretty much what you think it is.
Well, there are two distinct sort of branches of Judaism, aren't there? And they're sort of regionally based. Do I have that wrong? I may have it wrong.
No, you are correct. Uh-huh. I mean, in terms of Ashkenazi versus Sephardic.
Yes.
So right. So there's northern, northeastern European, and then it sort of has a tendency to be split northeastern European versus everybody else.
Okay.
Which is not really right. Uh-huh. It's more like Jews who came out of Germany originally and then migrated to Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And Jews from Spain who migrated into North Africa, and then you have Jews in the Middle East who are from neither of those places.
Right.
So, you know, it's really much more varied than that.
Yeah.
But it makes for a lot of interesting eating when you go to Israel, though.
And it's going to produce some very different kinds of music. Those are
very different.
Cultures, yeah.
And it's kind of fun because it's all, you know, I like bringing it in and listening to it and going, okay, so what's Jewish and what's not? And everyone goes, oh, I don't know what to make of this music. I never heard this before. And maybe it's this. And I say, no, it's Jewish.
Do the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi, are there different belief systems or within those
there
branches?
There are different. No. The essential beliefs are exactly the same.
Okay.
Are there differences in custom that had to do with being separated for the better part of 1,500 years? Yes.
Okay.
So here's the biggie. This is the one that everybody knows. Ashkenazi Jews are not allowed to eat rice on Passover. That's it.
What?
That's the biggie. Yes. Ashkenazi Jews are not allowed to eat rice or legumes of any kind, whereas Sephardim are like perfectly fine with eating them.
Okay. And where does that come from?
That has to do with 1,000 years ago. Rabbis in Poland or wherever took a look at rice and they put it in water and it swelled in water. So they figured, oh, it must be like, you know, grain. They thought it must, you know, ferment in the same way that wheat does.
Okay.
So it's
which is a bad thing.
Yeah, because you're not supposed to have any leavening on
oh,
Passover.
Oh, right. Okay. That's where it
comes. Supposed to be, you know, insufferable wallboard that we know as matzah. Which, you know, and then everyone I know who's not Jewish always says to me, "Yeah, but I love matzah. I put butter on it." And I go, "Yeah, you eat it for 8 days, and you tell me then what you think."
cardboard.
Indigestion.
Can you talk a little bit about
sure.
how the two sort of branches, how their music is different?
Sure. The differences in the music have everything to do with where they lived. And Wagner always used to say, anti-Semitically, of course, that the Jews didn't have their own music, that they essentially adopted other people's music and then just did other people's stuff because they weren't original.
He was such a sweetie.
What a doll. You know, I love him. Yeah. I'd like to take him out for a sandwich, knuckle sandwich.
Right.
Anyway, so he's not entirely wrong in that, you know, you have a diaspora that's lasted for 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time not to be home.
Yeah.
And over time, let's face it, you know, we move away to college and we develop different tastes and things.
Sure.
Think about that. You're away for 4 years and you come home, you're totally different than when you left high school.
Right.
Right? So, all right, try that 2,000 years and thousands of miles away from home and you have no home. Your home is no longer your home. So you develop, you listen to other stuff. And let's be honest with each other about music. Good music is good music and bad music is bad music.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like what you hear, you copy it.
Sure.
Everybody does this.
Absolutely.
So this was absolutely the truth. So this is what they heard all the time. So what they heard is what they started to sing.
Right, because no music grows out of, you know, you don't
There's
just
no such
sort
thing
of,
as a vacuum.
Right. And you know.
Well, see, but here's the thing. So I think, like, kosher cuisine, for example, mm-hmm. it's kind of an interesting misnomer. I mean, it's kosher something. Like, it's the style of some type of food that's been – but you see, with any Jewish culture, when you live in a diaspora community for thousands of years or a couple of thousand years anyway, mm-hmm. And you start to adapt to things, you also make it your own. And you add your own slant on things, and things start to change. So it doesn't just become a pale imitation of the original. It becomes its very own distinct thing.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, this is how new things get made. It's not like they just appear, you know, from nothing. They evolve from the things that are around them, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's very funny. I have a lot of Polish friends, and we love to argue over, so is it Jewish or Polish? Food-wise, because it's like so much of the same food. So, you know, I'm like, well, I don't know. Is this this or this? And then, you know, we joke about it a lot.
That could be a game show.
Is it Jewish or Polish? Find out next week.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yep.
That's great.
There is one great secular piece on Hanukkah, really. And of course, that's by George Frederick Handel.
Ah, yes.
The great Baroque composer and born the same year as Bach, he actually wrote a setting of the Judah Maccabee story called Judas Maccabeus. Mm-hmm. And I figured we'd hear a Jew sing it because it's really, really, really good. This is a recording of Richard Tucker singing the aria Sound an Alarm. Mm-hmm. I think this is a live 1951 broadcast from the Hollywood Bowl, actually.
Oh, wow.
And it is stunning.
His design, while a righteous leader and Jehovah mine. Sound an alarm, sound an alarm, your silver trumpet sound, and call the brave and only brave and only. Call the brave, and the only brave of all. Sound an alarm, your silver trumpet, your trumpet, your trumpet. And call the brave and only brave and only brave of song. Call the brave, call the brave and only brave of song.
Whew. That boy can sing.
That boy could sing indeed. He started off as a synagogue cantor in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Not bad for a nice Jewish boy from Borough Park.
Is this something that you guys would include in a service at Shelter Rock?
No. Our service is so traditional that we would probably never sing in English.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's all Hebrew. No, that's just a great piece. I mean, it's very exciting. And Tucker, of course, is, you know, such a great tenor that it's just marvelous to hear it because it's just such a ring and a trumpet-like sound himself. So fabulous singer. So Handel was busy scribbling oratorios in the last phase of his career because his opera composing career was over. Italian opera in London had ceased to be popular. However, with oratorio, he could take the show anywhere. They didn't have to stage it. And it became quite financially successful for him to take usually Old Testament subjects with the exception, of course, of Messiah and a number of other oratorios. So he set a lot of these Old Testament stories and they were a huge hit for the most part. And Judas Maccabeus probably has the best number of hits of any show outside of Messiah. There's a great final Hallelujah, Amen chorus. So yeah, a great tune, and not as great as the great Hallelujah chorus, of course, from Messiah, but a wonderful tune and fun to sing.
Yeah,
and
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. And it's not terribly challenging for a high school choir to do. So many high school choirs perform it.
Yeah, I dig it.
So it's fun. I dig it too. I also dig it. Yeah.
Well, tell us about some of the other music of Hanukkah. With Christmas music, I mean, you're just bombarded with it all season. This year, starting at Halloween, I started.
I found it 3 days before Halloween was the first time.
Oh my Lord!
I heard this year, which was scary.
I feel like Thanksgiving is the forgotten holiday, you know.
No, I didn't forget it. I'm planning on eating a lot.
Well, it's Thanksgiving. How is
with
it?
Latkes yet?
Yes, because it's Thanksgiving-ka.
Yep, or however. Thanksgiving-ka.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving-ka, definitely. In my house, it is.
Yeah. How is that going to be different from your usual Hanukkah celebration?
There'll be even more eating.
There'll be even more.
So, you know, it's Jews are definitely people who know how to overeat. And this will be truly spectacular overeating, because not only will it include massive amount of turkey and all the sides, but it will now include fried things in large quantities, which in my book, you can't possibly go wrong that way.
No,
but, you know, definitely a plus in my book.
But it's not going to happen for another like 77,000 years or something like that.
Well, you know, all the better that I should stuff my turkey with potato pancakes then, I think.
Imagine Judah Maccabees sitting down to roast turkey, passing the potatoes to Squanto, and pilgrims in Jerusalem standing with Hasmoneans, got to get this temple cleaned up pronto. Like applesauce and cranberries, turkey stuffed with fried latkes, it's clear that this is one heck of a mitzvah. Let's celebrate this great country, religious minorities, everybody loves Thanksgiving.
I really think we should go to the dreidel song, right?
Although it cracks me up. So, I mean, this is a very typical, Hanukkah kids song. And in this particular arrangement from South Park, it's rather brilliantly punctuated with a whole bunch of different things. But it's a typical little song. Every little Jewish kid who ever went to, you know, a Hanukkah party knows this song.
Okay, you're my little brother, so I have to show you how to celebrate Hanukkah. This is called a dreidel. You spin it and see where it lands, and you sing this song. I have a little dreidel, I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, with dreidel I shall play. Oh, dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay. Dreidel, 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 with dreidel I shall play. Now you try it, Ike. Just spin it with
your that is absolutely
like
brilliant.
Yeah, it's...
And it cracks me up. I mean, because I've heard that song since I was like 2.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, when you hear that song from the time you're knee-high to a grasshopper and then you hear this arrangement, it's pretty hilarious. Especially the Courtney Cox, I Love You bit.
Right. Do you guys actually listen to this, or is this kind of like the Frosty the Snowman of Hanukkah songs?
Definitely the Frosty the Snowman kind of thing. It's really secular, I mean. Just talking about, you know, you have a little dreidel you made out of. It's just a silly song about a dreidel, and you play a dreidel with it, and you teach it to little kids, and then you get, you know, the 3-year-olds in nursery school to toddle out and go,
I had a little dreidel.
You know, it's very cute.
Nice. Cantor Benjamin Matas, thank you so much for being on the Classical Classroom all the way from Manhattan.
All the way from Manhattan, I brave the elements.
Thanks so much for being here. This was really fun. I now know 100% more about the music of Hanukkah than I did before the show started.
Cool. Yeah. All right.
All right. I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving.
And thank you, and a very happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas to you.
All right, take care, Ben.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Listeners, if there's something that you would like to hear addressed on the Classical Classroom, please feel free to send me an email at dclay@classical917.org. If you want to hear past shows or see what's coming up, or listen to the current show, for that matter, go to classical917.org/classroom. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Happy holidays, Thanksgiving.